Hi, welcome back to your Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Ryan here with Jeremy. How's everybody doing? We want to thank you, Vic, from Coffin Cats for taking the time to jump on the show. It's a pleasure to actually be sitting and talking with you. I've seen
Happy
you guys
here,
play like at least 10 times over the years, and always a fun show to watch you guys play. So,
right on.
Definitely cool to have you. So how's it going first and foremost, man?
Good. So today was my last day of my normal day job for the year. And now touring season officially starts for us. We head over to Europe next week. And so we're over there for two and a half weeks. And we got a string of shows throughout. We play in London. We play Dublin, London, and then head over to Germany and Czech Republic, and looking forward to it because we haven't been over there since before the pandemic. So it's been a little.
Oh shit!
Oh yeah. Which it's funny that you say touring season starts now because you guys have probably played somewhere close to 100 shows this year so far already.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah. and actually, so for us, it's weird to call. So we went out with Reverend Horton Heat last month or earlier this month, I should say. And it was 5 shows, and then we came home for a week and then went back out for 5 more shows. And in our opinion, that doesn't stipulate a tour. That just, we call that like a run.
Okay.
A short run.
Yeah. That makes sense. Because you can go back home for the weekend.
Yeah. It was when you can use your own toilet a few times in 1 week, you're not on tour.
You're not on tour. Gotcha. I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah, you guys play a lot. I mean, you're busy. We were going to get a hold of you like last year around this time, but I'm like looking at your tour schedule all the time. And I'm like, man, it's hard to find like a 3-week gap where you don't have a run of shows.
Yeah, when the cold weather hits Michigan, we hit the road.
I do know.
Although it hasn't been cold at all, so.
Yeah, it just started getting cold up here.
Yeah, it's like the first day that actually feels like fall.
Yeah. Yeah, I got like my winter socks on and stuff already. I'm like, it's cold.
I'm like, well, it's flannel and hoodie season no matter what as soon as it hits October for me. So I've spent a few days sweating here and there. Yeah.
So I know, and I got permission to say this, but I know you guys are going to be playing Black Christmas this year.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I just
found out for sure like last week or so. So
okay. Yeah, I talked to Ramona about it, and I messaged her a little bit ago before we started, and I was like, did this get announced yet? Because I don't want to drop the ball. And she's like, no, go ahead and say it. So
that's great.
If it's not announced before this comes out, then this is the first that people will be hearing about it.
We love Ramona. Ramona, we go way back with her, and it's awesome that she's keeping the Black Christmas thing going. It was originally a Suicide Machine thing, and then Jay wanted to give it a break, and then Ramona picked up the reins, and it's like last year's was great with Cold as Life, and looking forward to this time.
Yeah, I was there last year, and it was fucking awesome with Earth Mover played too.
Yeah, we should be there this year as long as there's no crazy weather during that day for the drive down.
Yeah.
That's usually the only hang up is like,
or
if we got something going on with kids, but
it can be snowing. I'll still, it depends. It
snowing
pretty,
is
it
fine.
Has to be pretty
I'm just
bad.
Saying it can't be apocalyptic out.
Yeah, to put it in perspective for anybody that's not living in the Midwest listening to this, you know, when we say we're not going to drive to a show because there's snow on the ground, that means there's like a foot.
Yeah, exactly.
That means you cannot see 10
foot and
feet.
Another foot's on the way. And you no matter how you put your highlights on your low light headlights, it looks like Star Wars coming at you.
Yep.
All right.
You're in the Falcon.
Just go home.
Yeah. If you have to coast 25 down I-75, you should not be out there.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had some pretty gnarly tour rides. Hey, how's like over in Europe? Is that pretty cool over there? I know you guys were over there a lot pre-COVID, right?
Yeah. So I think this next tour, I think this will be our 13th or our 14th.
Wow, that's fucking awesome.
We're normally when we're over there, we're in a transit sprinter van, There is one tour that we did where we were in like a Nightliner tour bus, which was just ridiculous. We were sharing it with some other bands and stuff. It wasn't just ours.
Rockstar life, dude.
Yeah. Well, that was a fun one because I don't remember. And it really was like a rock star tour where I was completely next to blacked out. Just before I got on stage, I knew what was going on, and then getting off stage because there was just a rolling bar right in the parking lot, and it was like, all right.
And you're drunk in the daylight.
Yeah, yeah. Those that was a hell of a, that was like 2010, something like that. But yeah, we're normally in a Sprinter van, and this next tour is going to be really interesting because originally we were going to have a friend come out, and over there is regular, what I call regular, you know, what we're used to, side of the vehicle driving. And then in the UK, the steering wheel's on the right-hand side. Well, we're flying in and we're getting a standard van, but then we go right into the UK where we're driving on the other side of the road. And I'm the only one in the band that can actually drive a manual vehicle, and our van is a manual and we don't have a driver. So I'm going to be taking the reins and driving on the wrong side of the road for the first time in my life. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh man,
that's crazy. You know, that's the thing I noticed. Like, nobody knows how to drive a stick anymore.
No. I mean, my vehicles are all stick, and it's great because it's pretty much like an anti-theft device.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody's ever going to figure that out, right? Unless they throw it in neutral and wheel it away.
Yeah, I was going to say they might Flintstone it or something.
But yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, driving, for the most part, driving over there, once you're in like mainland Europe, like driving throughout Germany is really feels no different than driving through the U.S. with the exception of when you're on the Autobahn, you can go as fast as your vehicle will allow you. But other than that, it's not too bad. But I will tell you what, driving in some of the old cities that were never meant for vehicles, they do such a good job of preserving their history over there that you're actually driving down cobblestone streets and brick buildings that were barely wide enough for a horse and buggy to get down, let alone a vehicle.
Yeah.
And of course, some of the places that you play are like in the heart of like an old downtown. So you're trying to wheel your van back there and trying not to, you know, hit people that have their windows open in the alley.
And so there's a pretty good like rockabilly, psychabilly scene over there, like more so, would you say, than like in the States?
Yeah. So where the U.S., where rock and roll like got its, you know, going with Chuck Berry and all that stuff, it got really picked up and revitalized in like the 70s and the 60s and whatnot over in the U.K. And there was a big scene for American rock and roll, rockabilly and all that stuff. And then it kind of got mixed in with the punk rock scene over there. And became this mutant called psychobilly. And so over in the UK and Europe is where your strongest psychobilly scene developed. And then it spilled over to the US with bands like the Quakes. And I mean, there's always going to be an argument on what was the first psychobilly band and all that stuff. I mean, I would think that the Cramps were a huge heavy influence on all of it, but there had been grungy garage. You can get lost in it. And with you guys being vinyl collectors, I'm sure, you know, there's a garage scene that goes back into the early 60s. That sounds like any hard punk rock that's out today. So there's, I would say that, the psychobilly scene has always been much more embraced in the UK and Europe. And over here, it comes and goes in waves. The SoCal has always kept the West Coast has always kind of kept the Billy scene alive as far as like psychobilly and whatnot. And it's cool. I mean, you're starting to see a younger group of kids get back into it, touring across the U.S. It's cool now that we've been around for two decades. We're definitely seeing a younger generation discover everything that has to do with like Billy music and all that. Seeing young kids stoked on us is really, it's really cool. So,
yeah. Well, when it comes to psychobilly, like, you guys are at least in like the top 3 to 5 bands that would get brought up, like, to bring somebody into the genre, I would think by now, because you've been at it for over 20 years. Like,
I guess it's just because we won't go away.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to say either you guys or Madsen was like the first psychobilly band that I heard and like really got into, but it was a bit ago now, so I can't remember for
Madsen's
sure. But
dope.
Yeah.
At Madsen are like top dog in this community.
The Meteors,
I'm sure. Yeah,
I always like the Meteors.
But I had some friends, Gutter Ghouls, that they were a band around there. I'm sure you know them. You've played with them a few times.
So every Thanksgiving Eve we do an annual show at a local bar that we kind of grew up playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was at the Token Lounge show that you guys did in November. It wasn't Sanctuary, by the way. It was Token Lounge. We were trying to figure out where it was the other day. I was like, oh, it was Sanctuary. And I was like, oh, wait, no, it's Token Lounge.
Earlier this year with the Queers.
Yeah. That was, you did that. Yeah, that's right. It was with Elvis Hitler and who else was there? Gutter Ghouls played, and then there was some other band.
Yeah, that one. Few years back.
No, this was the one that just happened in November.
Oh, okay, this was the where we had the Gutter Ghouls get back together.
Yeah, you guys were playing in dinosaur pajamas and stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's the other thing with this show. With that's the only show that we actually ever dress up.
Yeah.
We each year it's just a different theme, and this year we got a pretty funny theme. For anybody that's a fan of 80s. Cartoons and toys, they'll enjoy it. So
yeah, I mean, those pajamas look hot as fuck on stage though. Yeah, like, you guys looked like you were dying towards
damn,
the end.
Polyester shit.
And we learned our lesson from before the last time that we wore like full suit get-ups where I'm like I was seeing spots and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
so yeah, this next round of outfits is more appropriate for activities.
Yeah, it was a fun show. I drove from Alpena that day, and then we drove back that night too, because it was Thanksgiving the next morning, and I had a bunch of stuff to do. But I was like, oh, I haven't seen Gutter Ghouls play in like years, so I was like, you know, we'll see Coffin Cats again. They'll be around, but like Gutter Ghouls, I didn't know if they were gonna play again.
Yeah,
so
that could be it.
Had to
know?
Go.
Well, I always, anytime I see those guys, I'm like, well, get it back together. Let us know. Let's do some shows. So.
No, they did a great job, and it was a lot of fun. Like, you guys have put on a good show together, for sure.
So who are you playing with on this tour?
So this tour is pretty much, we're out on our own, and the shows are mostly just regional support local bands, and we're doing a couple festival shows. When we get over there, a couple days after we get over there, we're doing a festival called the Psychobilly Freakout that is in London at a place called the New Cross Inn, and there's a lot of heavy hitter psychobilly bands that are gonna be playing that festival, so it's cool. I believe it's a 3-day fest, and we're playing on Saturday.
Dope. Be like Necromantics being there and shit.
Not on this particular one. No. But the Quakes, the Ricochets, some old school bands.
Oh, that's cool.
Milwaukee Wildmen from the Netherlands. They're a classic band. I've never actually got to see them, so I'm looking forward to that. And then we actually finished the tour off at El Dorado Festival up in Holland, and that's a really big festival. So I'm looking forward to checking that out for the first time.
Oh, that's cool.
Is there anywhere that you guys haven't played in the world yet, country-wise?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been to Japan. We haven't been to Australia. Haven't been to China. yeah, I mean, it's pretty much North America as far as the U.S. and Canada, and we've also played in Mexico. And then, everything in the European Union, pretty much, in the U.K. as well. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
I think it'd be huge in, be huge in Japan. You know, they seem to like love everything American.
We've really been starting to dive more and more into it, getting some contacts and whatnot, because we'd love to get over there. I know one other place that we haven't been is Alaska, and we actually are playing there in December.
Oh, right on.
That's a hike.
Yeah, so We're gonna fly in for that. There's a great band out there called the Avery Wolves, and they bring in they fly bands in to play with them sometimes.
Oh, that's cool.
Trying to arrange it for years now, and it finally worked out that we're gonna fly in. So that way we have covered all the states at that point. Last summer, we did Hawaii, and that was the first time, and that was cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask Hawaii. That's surprising. We just interviewed a hardcore band from Hawaii like a couple weeks ago.
Oh, right on. What were they called? It's quite possible that we played with them.
The band is called Ikaika.
And I don't they haven't played yet.
I think their first show is in like a week or something in Florida.
Right on. Yeah, when we were out there, we did a bar show with Teenage Bottle Rocket, and then we played like a festival the next day. There was a bunch of different...
Right on. Is that the first time you've been to Hawaii, or you've been there before that?
Oh, sorry, that was our first time.
Damn. I never been to Hawaii, but like that's a long, long flight.
Flew in, looked at the ocean, played the show, and then woke up, played the next show, and then got on a plane, came back home, went to work.
Yeah.
Road life.
Way it goes sometimes.
So, I mean, how has it been? I wanted to ask this, and you probably get asked this quite often, but how is it just touring for 20 plus years? Like, how do you guys pull it off? Like, you're in a confined van, like with two other guys, like without getting on each other's nerves or like shit like that. Like, how do you do it?
Well, the secret to that, and what I tell every band that, you know, hits us up or talks about like, you know, any advice and that kind of stuff, is I say, talent is one thing, but what's more important about being in a band than talent is chemistry. And the guys I'm in a band with are basically like family to me. We all work together, whether we're playing in band mode or we're at home, we're still all working together. We see each other pretty much 6 days out of the week, even when we're not doing band stuff. So it's a very close relationship we all had, and we've had it for some time now. And so we don't get sick of each other. We're all of our heads have always been in the same spot of, you know, just trying to progress in life and keeping the band as involved in our lives as we can, and also maintaining a personal life as we have families and stuff too. And, right. And everybody respects everybody as far as like, hey, we can't go on tour at this time. I have this in my life going on. And it's never a blowout. It's hey, we're all mature adults. That's life. We'll structure a tour around this, this, and this. So there's never any drama. There's, you know, we see, like I said, we see each other every day, and it's like one big family.
I will say though, and it's cool. You all only have to deal. There's like three of you, not a, like, once you add another personality ska band. Yeah, ska band. It's like so many people you gotta like keep happy, you know.
We like to say there's four of us because we have our road guy Big Joey.
Oh, and right on.
Joey drink tickets.
Yeah, he's been with us pretty much the whole time as well. And it's funny because in the summertime we actually work for his irrigation company doing sprinkler installations, and then he comes out and works with us the rest of the year, so we switch roles back and forth.
That's cool.
That is cool. Yeah, I met him. He was working the merch table at the show when I was there. I talked to him for a quick minute, like as quick as he could, with a bunch of people behind you.
And you know, the other thing too is like, not to get too inside baseball, but here's the way that we think, and you know, it might not work for every band, and I'm sure it doesn't, as sometimes a band is just one person with hired people, and we totally understand that. But with us, how we work is, ever since the beginning of the band, even if I wrote a song and somehow I came up with drums, which I wouldn't because I can't play drums, but no matter how much of a song that I write or contribute to, the song is always split one third amongst the members, whoever the members of the band were at that time. It was always split one third, and it's always been that way. And so we all are out here. We're all out here working equally as hard and equally putting as much as our life into it. So we all split everything, divided equally amongst each other and everything. So like when it comes to payment and all that, everything goes equally out to all of us, into the band, into a band fund as well. And it's just, like I said, there's no drama. It's that's how we keep it going. There's everyone's happy and everyone's just, you know, everyone's in it to win it.
Yeah, because I mean, every time I've seen you guys play, like you play 110% no matter what. And so, and any videos I've seen, like on Instagram, you playing across the country, across the world, like you guys are always giving like a crazy good show. So it's cool to see your work ethic be like that on both sides, music and your job.
We have fun. I mean, we have fun because we've seen every facet of, you know, we've been there in front of thousands of people. We've played in front of one person that bought a ticket and that's what it is. You know, it's we've been everywhere in between. And you know what? We're grateful to be, after 20 years, we're grateful to be able to book a tour and be fairly confident that we're at least not going to come home broke. And that alone is like, hey, even a quote unquote bad show is still a good night.
Yeah. And you're like quote unquote headliner now, you know what I mean? Like you're just out on your own. It's awesome.
Yeah. And, but it's cool. And then the other thing that we do now too is, we for quite some time we were booking ourselves because we worked with an agency in like the early 2000s, and eventually the agency was shutting down and we just were like, well, we have all the contacts and we've been to all these places numerous times. We're going to start booking ourselves. And so we found that after about 10 years of booking ourselves, we eventually were hitting a lot of gatekeeping when it came to being able to get into play certain festivals and stuff, because when a festival is booking bands, a lot of times they just want to deal with an agent. They just want to deal with an agency that says, hey, I'm going to give you this band for this package price. And they're not looking at the email that's coming from, you know, a coffin cat's going, hey guys, can we be on your festival? Because they're just going to deal with the agents. And we realized that after trying. And so finally we ended up working with somebody who was a kind of a longtime friend of ours, Jay Crash, over at Crawl Space Booking. And so we've been working with him now for a little over a year, and it's been great. He's gotten us on festivals. And the other cool thing too is that we've been playing with bands that are on the roster. And this January, when we head back out on the road, we're going to be going out with a killer female fronted band called The Rumors, and Lightning Luke, who also plays in Bridge City Sinners.
Oh yeah, I know that band. Okay. Yeah, that's cool, man. You guys aren't signed to like any label or anything right now. You're doing all that independent too?
Yeah. So we were very early on. We started out, I mean, our very first album, nobody was looking at us. It was self-released. And then not too long after the first pressing came out, I was contacted by a label out of Texas called Hairball 8 Records, and we entered into a distribution deal with them, which led to releasing a few more albums with them. And then after that, we signed with Stomp Records, which were based out of Montreal, and they were great to work with. But the only problem we had was that because they were based out of Montreal, our albums were considered import albums. And it's kind of like, we got good distribution throughout Canada, but the album kind of fell flat because nothing was happening with it in the States. and so we just did that one album with Stomp, and then we got picked up with Sailor's Grave Records, who's kind of a side record label of Thorpe Records, which you might be familiar with all.
Yeah, we know Andy.
We interviewed him. We interviewed him a while back.
Andy's a rock solid dude.
He's awesome.
And Big Dwayne, they did a fantastic job when we were working with them. And just the way that the wind was blowing after we did two releases with them, kind of caught hold that, wow, you can start distributing we figured out how we could do self-distribution and get our stuff out there digitally. Because originally, when everything was coming out with Apple Music, our iTunes at that time, and Spotify was in its infancy, we had no idea how do you get your music on that. Right. And you know, the labels we were working with knew how to do it. And then third party companies started to develop, like TuneCore and DistroKid. And so we basically were like, well, we can pretty much do what a record label does at this point. And we just started distributing ourselves. And yeah, so we've had Coffin Cat. We were like, well, we should put something down in the corner of our albums that looks cool, like a label. And so we put Coffin Cat's Records, and that's what we've been pretty much putting things out on. It's our fake record label.
It's awesome.
And we even make catalog numbers and all that.
Yeah, because I picked up a copy of Inhumane when I was at that show. And yes. I was like, yeah, these have catalog numbers. And they looked like, I mean, if you wouldn't have told me that, I would have just assumed you guys were running your own label.
Yeah. Well, the Inhumane, that's a repressing. That's the first repressing, because originally it was a Hairball 8 release. And then, yeah. And then we have... And then we repressed it on for the first time on vinyl, which was cool to finally get that out. And
the only one I have is the one on Stomp, and I had to get it from like an old Interpunk, maybe back okay, in the yep. day.
Yep, yeah, Interpunk. Interpunk was like the go-to place for some time, yeah. And where a lot of our stuff was distributed out of.
Yeah, I have a few patches from Interpunk, like in a Van's shoebox somewhere that were Coffin Cat's patches.
I have a, it's funny, from I can tell from different eras of my life, I have different boxes that are just full of, you know, pins and patches and all that. Yeah. And all this, one day this is going to go on a vest, and I'll have this on a vest, and I forget that I have them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you go through them and you're like, damn, holy, why did shit. I never use this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I didn't even know I had this. So you have a new record coming out, right?
Yes. It is coming out at the, actually, I believe it's the end of November. I think we're making the Thanksgiving show the release date of the album. And as far as that's when you're going to be able to purchase it directly from us. And also the pre-orders are available now on our website. And the first 222 vinyl pre-orders get a special limited edition enamel pin. We wanted to make like an 80s style, like square enamel pin that had like the album cover on it. And they turned out really cool. So we have those available for just as an incentive if you want to pre-order. And so far, I think we're pushing 200 pre-orders as of today. Eric Damn. Updated, or he pays attention to all that stuff, and he updated me on it.
So by the time anybody sees this, yeah. they might be gone.
Because this will be, we'll be posting this on Monday, so maybe. Yep.
There might still be a chance. And we always like to, whenever we're putting vinyl out, the first 1,000 copies we like to do in a color. And this one is, we're doing 1,000 copies of a gray vinyl. And then afterwards, once the 1,000 are up, then we print everything on black vinyl. So.
Okay. Makes sense. Are all your albums on vinyl at this point? Because I've looked for some of them, and I'm like, I don't know if there is one.
The first one. So after this new release has been out for a while, and we recoup some money and get some money in the band fund to press. I'm sure you know vinyl is expensive to press, yep. So we have to save up a decent amount to press more. And our plan is to finally get the first album out, because. Cool. Okay. We did Inhumane, and then we're like, all right, with the money we make off of Inhumane, we'll release the first album. But then we ended up taking that money and putting it towards the pressing of this new album, which is Higher Lows.
Yeah, because it's not like you guys only need like 100 of them. I mean, you're selling quite a few, so it adds up quick.
But we work with a great company called Pirates Press. Mm-hmm. And they're located out of San Francisco, and they use a vinyl manufacturer out of the Czech Republic. Back when vinyl wasn't as popular as it is again now, Europe was some of the only functioning vinyl plants, because people were still actually purchasing vinyl on a regular basis. And so, yeah, that's where Pirates Press linked up with these guys over in Czech Republic for decent prices on printing vinyl, and then they basically freight everything on over
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of new releases, like when they come into the store each week, there's a lot of stuff that is pressed in the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or sometimes Canada too.
Yep. And by, I think it's something like by law, it has to show a sticker that says printed in Czech Republic. And
yeah,
that's cool. So,
so with this new album, this is the first release. And what was 2017? You guys' last record was 2018, somewhere around there.
Yeah. So we did a full length in 2017 called Party Time in the End Times. And oddly enough, today, as at the time of recording this, over in Germany, there's a record label called Ring of Fire Records, and we gave them the rights. They're distributing a repressing of all the vinyl in different colors. So there's a European re-release happening now of it.
Yeah, and I seen that post on Instagram a little bit ago, actually.
Right on. And then in 2020, we did an EP called You Can't Take It With You, and that was that was our first venture into self-recording, and I mixed it all, and it worked out all right. So we did the same thing with this new one. So we recorded ourselves, mixed it, and produced it, and looking forward to getting it out there.
Right on.
Did that EP come out in a physical format?
Yes, on Picture Disc vinyl and Digipak.
Gotcha.
I missed that release. I didn't see it.
That's why I asked.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I blame that on Coffin Cats Records promotional department.
Which is probably also one of you three.
Oh, that's funny.
But, the other cool thing, and it's cool, but it kind of sucks at the same time. We now, working with Crawl Space Booking, we're linked up now with our booking agent, his wife. She's handling our social media, and she's absolutely fantastic with getting all of our information out there. And what I was leaning towards when I say that it sucks is that basically she had to go in there and learn how to game the system and fighting all these algorithms that are basically hampering all these independent artists that are just trying to get their music out there, just trying to say, hey, we have a tour happening. There is so much, it's so convoluted in being able to get promotion out there. I mean, I remember like, it was like shit 10 years ago, seeing Pennywise post on Facebook, like, hey, we're trying to let you guys know about our shows, but Facebook wants us to pay this much just to let, you know, 100 people know. And
yeah,
it's still pretty much like that today, where it's like, hey, yeah, all these media sites, they're free. But I mean, also they have every right to charge you too, I guess. But it just sucks that there's an algorithm that you have to fight to be able to get out in front of people. And she is absolutely awesome with it. And it's been really interesting to see that we haven't changed anything as far as frequency of playing shows and all that. But now with her being able to handle the social media and get in there and basically make it a day job, there's people coming up to us saying, wow, it's crazy, you guys are like blowing up. And we're like, no, still getting
still
paid
the same thing. Yeah.
Same. It's just we're she's been able to make us far more visual online, and that's unfortunately there aren't any you know, local magazines coming out anymore or local rags coming out that give you all the, like, here's the shows coming to Michigan, here's the shows coming to the Detroit area. It's if you're not looking for it online, you're not going to see it.
Yep. Yeah, and even sometimes if you are looking for it, it gets buried in stuff.
That's
anyways.
That's what I hate. Everything gets, like you were just saying about the algorithm, and then shit just gets buried.
Perfect example. Like one of my favorite bands is Bad Religion, and I didn't even find out. I've missed a couple shows that came through Detroit because I didn't even see it. And I like Bad Religion online, and I didn't even see anything advertised. Nice. And that's crazy to think, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It was like a couple weeks ago, like before I emailed you, I was like, I'm pretty sure I seen the Coffin Cats were dropping a new record somewhere. And I was looking everywhere and I could not find the post. And I was like, this wasn't a dream, was it? Like,
we were just kind of soft teasing it from our personal pages and whatnot. And
yeah, okay. So I must have seen it on somebody else, like Tommy's page or something. Probably. Like, because I was looking for it on your page, and I was like, man, was I, like, just imagining that? Like, did I just conjure that up?
I didn't want to post anything and then get yelled at by Jay, who's our booking agent, or his wife, Ruthie, like, oh, you're going to mess up our algorithm. They had a plan on when to promote and all that stuff, so it's working out well.
Whole fucking science.
Yeah, there is, like, a lot of... science behind it. And that's a downfall of mine is, like, I get home and I'm like, oh, fuck Instagram. I don't want to go on there.
it might sound weird, but it's like, it's to me, it's just, it's brain draining sometimes to open up the phone and stare at it and try to remember all these posts and all that stuff. Yeah. And
it's easy, like, to just scroll through it, but when you actually got to, like, time shit out and, like, post here at this time and here at this time, like, I don't know, it takes the whole enjoyment of even scrolling out of it. So you're just like, oh, I'm done with this.
Yeah. I mean, if I had my way and if I didn't do what I do, I wouldn't be on social media at this point.
I mean, but it's a necessity for you guys.
It's a necessary evil. And, you know, if we're going to be out there promoting ourselves, I like to keep my finger on the tab and see what's going on. And so
with this new record, you said you guys recorded it all yourself, mixed, mastered everything. You have your own studio, don't you?
Yes. So we recorded it down here. During the pandemic, I had a studio at a building. We have an industrial building, and we had a print shop. We ran out of it and we had space. I built a studio there. And when the pandemic happened, financial things happened. And so I ended up moving the studio into the basement of my house, and it works out really well, because now whenever I got to go do studio shit, I just go downstairs. And so it's cool. I have everything here that I need to record bands and all that. And I record different artists as well. And so we recorded it, and I mixed it, and then I didn't like how I mixed it, so I mixed it again, and then I didn't like how I mixed it, so a year later, after about it finally is coming out. And then we actually I don't do mastering. I'm of the opinion that I get too married to a sound of a track when I'm mixing it. And for me, I love having different ears hearing a master, and so that they can put their magic sprinkle on it and finishing touches, maybe hearing frequencies that I'm just, you know, that are too dulled out for me after listening to the same track over and over. So
right.
It's always good to have a separate mastering engineer, in my opinion. And so we worked with the same guy we worked with on Party Time in the End Times, Adam Ion. And he has mastered everybody from Beyonce to Bad Religion, and has Grammys on his wall and all that stuff. Because we're like, well, we're saving money by recording ourselves, so we might as well splurge a little bit on the master.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you get to rehear, like, everything that he did before it gets sent off, or does his final say the say-so?
No, he sends it and goes, oh, let me know if you want to change anything. I'm like, oh yeah, like, I'm going to tell the guy that. Like, oh yeah, I think you overshot the bass on this one. It's cool, because you always, at least me, putting something out that you've done yourself, you've done everything to it, there's always going to be that, oh man, is it good enough? Oh man. And then at least filtering it through somebody who has professional ears, it gives you a little bit more confidence.
Yeah, that's true. That. But I mean, I feel like you guys would have to hear it, because, like, I feel like stand up bass, it has to be mixed a certain way in the end, like, or mastered a certain way in the end, because it has to have that right pop, but not overpowering. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's how I learned. That's how I started out learning mixing, was mixing bands with upright basses, including our own. And then when I started mixing bands with electric basses, I was like, oh, this is really easy. Okay. And because the problem is that, so you got your regular punk rock band, you got your good old P bass. That is just one a bass note's going through, machine gunning. And it's thick, it fills out the bottom end. Well, an upright bass, everybody's upright bass sounds different. And everybody's upright bass has different frequency responses in the low end. And sometimes an upright bass wants to swallow a kick drum completely. There's just many, many different challenges that come with getting an upright bass, especially if you're mixing a band with distorted guitars and heavy drums. It's kind of a challenge to make sure everything has its place in the mix. And so that was something that I wanted to be able to offer to other bands, is like, hey, I play upright. I think I know how to mix upright. So come to me.
Yeah, I could definitely, now that I think about it, how that the drums could muddy up the bass muddy up the drums, like all that shit.
Yeah, there's it's interesting. And it was a very good learning curve to have out in front of me as I was learning all this audio engineering stuff like that. And then again, like I said, once it came to mixing bands that had standard electric basses, I was like, oh, okay, this I see how it's supposed to sound, and this is easy.
Yeah, cool. There's no like fret clanging and all that stuff. So, because I've been at shows, and like sometimes you get a sound guy that's like got the bass either way too low because he's trying not to get it to be too overpowering, or it's just like punching you in the chest, and you're like, oh man, these like the claps that you get off the fretboard are like smacking you.
I die on stage sometimes when it's like, don't be that guy, don't say shit, but you can hear blatantly where the front of house engineer has done the upright sound, and I'm like, I know exactly what he needs to turn down, but during the show, I'm not going to be like, excuse me, sound guy, can you turn down 186 hertz, please, because you're making my clackety clack sound extra clacky, you know?
Do you have a name for your studio by chance? Just wondering.
I call it Low Note Studios.
Low Note Studio.
Yeah.
So for your upright basses, do you just buy them outright, or do you do custom builds like after you buy it?
I've had one bass custom built from, I've actually had a couple over the years custom built for me, and they're usually reinforced, and the basses that I've bought, like I usually buy lower end student model basses because I'm going to cut them open and put reinforcement dowel rods and whatnot in them, and just to make it strong for the road. Because
you gotta make it strong for you to stand on.
Yeah, I was gonna say the road, maybe I think it needs to be reinforced for you.
One guy years ago that helped me build a bass, he put a spring loaded end pin in it, and that's something I use all the time now, because when you're lifting your bass up and you're letting it come down on its end pin, it'll just be like a rock solid hit against the bottom of the bass. And I've had it before where that hit blows both sides out, and then the next day on the road you're going to Home Depot and getting some wood glue and clamps and hoping it starts. I've become a disaster on the road luthier for us and other bands we've toured with, when you know a neck breaks at a show, or the bass is in its case and somebody runs a amp head into it on accident loading out, or these things happen with those instruments. So
I saw you had like in a video, maybe I noticed, where you had almost like an erector set, like from maybe the neck to the body, and then some bolts, something through it. Yeah, it was reinforced.
That was a hasty repair that I had snapped the whole neck off of the bass of one particular tour, and we were on the road like a show every day. And so there was no time to like take it to a luthier or anything. It was pretty much like down and dirty, shove it back together and put a bunch of glue in there, and then put brackets on the side of the neck to make that glue hold in place, because we got to throw that thing in the van and go. And it worked out and stayed like that for years.
Interesting. So.
Have you ever like, most of the shows I've seen you at, you're throwing the bass up in the air. You guys are tossing it back and forth, standing on it, spinning it around. Have you ever just completely fucked up the stage on accident with the bass throwing it around?
I've taken out ceiling fans, and I've taken out acoustic tiles. You know, we've played in every type of outlet, and sometimes there'll be a stage that, you know, it's a stage that's normally meant for like an acoustic act or something like that, and it's got a nice ceiling fan above it, but somehow we're on that stage and I throw the bass up in the air, and either the ceiling fan gets knocked down and it's still going. We've had it where the ceiling fan has dropped down in between me and Tommy, and it's just going nuts like this. And
It probably makes good like for an effect on the fucking crowd.
I've knocked out stage lights with that thing. Again, ceiling tiles have come down, and I'm sure I have all kinds of asbestos in my system from out of old clubs off the ceiling and stuff.
You're gonna one day meet some guy that owns a bar or something. You're gonna go into play, and he's gonna have a drop ceiling, and it's all taken out. And he's like, "I knew you guys were coming."
At least the cool thing is like the couple times that it has happened. Like I think one of the clubs that had us actually sign the part that broke in the ceiling tile, and you know, it's like shit's gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, at least they were cool about it. Like it's not like you were intentionally trying to screw.
Oh,
it up.
I mean, most of the places that we play, we generally would like to be able to come back to. So
yeah, right?
Don't trash green rooms, and we don't, you know.
So how did you get into playing upright bass? Because it's a very particular instrument to pick up.
So back like when I was a kid, around years 10, 11 years old, I first heard Green Day on the radio. Bad Religion was actually on the radio at that time in Detroit radio. And they actually even played NOFX on this particular station. It was just, I happened to be turning on the radio and discovering punk rock and these cool bands at the right time that the radio didn't suck. And that was very short lived, probably for like a year. And then I discovered, I got my first CD player, and for Christmas that year, I got Bad Religion, Stranger Than Fiction. I got Offspring, Smash, Green Day, Dookie, and a Smashing Pumpkins CD. I still have those albums, and they're some of my favorites just because those are my introduction to, you know, at the time they called it alternative music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I remember because we got into that, and then not too long after that, we got cable in our house, and we got MTV, and I started watching Beavis and Butthead. And I loved the music videos because MTV, even at that time, barely played any like rock and roll, let alone punk rock that often. So at least with the Beavis and Butthead, you could see interesting and sometimes cool videos and discover bands and stuff like that. And one of the bands that I discovered was Reverend Horton Heat. And I had been familiar with upright bass as far as like you'd see the Stray Cats or something like that. And those all guys were always kind of around, but I never heard of the Reverend Horton Heat. They weren't as mainstream at the time as like Stray Cats were. Right. And I really liked that sound. But Reverend Horton Heat's albums were still hard to find to where I was at. And I fell in love with that sound, the upright bass. Seeing the upright bass in the music video on Beavis and Butthead was what told me, like, that's a really cool instrument. I'll probably never be able to get my hands on one. And it just kind of went to the back of my mind. And then I became a guitar player and played guitar in high school punk rock bands and stuff like that. And at that time, The Living End was starting to get popular on the radio, and there was a resurgence with there was a swing movement going on. So there's a lot of bands out there with upright basses playing live and stuff again. And I started to really get back into playing upright and saved up money, working a really shitty job at Toys R Us during a Christmas season, and saved up money and bought an upright bass off of eBay for, I think it was like $495, and
plus like 400 shipping because it's massive.
Yeah, but this was like 2000. Yeah, this is like 2000. Yeah, I think this was in the year 2000, so prices were still a little bit cheaper back then. But yeah, so I got my bass, and the cool thing was that a friend of mine at the time that I went to school with, he also got an upright bass, and he had gotten it before me. So he had started practicing, and he was able to show me some basic stuff. Yeah, I mean, that just became my instrument, and I played with different local bands around Detroit, just kind of getting the instrument down. And then eventually I wanted to have a band that would go on tour, and it's, you know, everybody wanting to get in the music and all that. It's like, yeah, maybe one day I'll be in a touring band. But the thing is that you have to be at the right place at the right time. You have to be able to leave home and still have a place to live when you get back there. You know, I got really lucky because I was able to find a couple of other musicians that had equal, like, hey, let's throw all caution to the wind and just get in a van and go. And we did that. And so basically we started in June of 2003, and by June, July of 2004, we were playing out in California, and pretty much every year after that, with the exception of, you know, the pandemic and all that, every year after we've toured every year, and just kept hitting the same places. And now it's really cool because we have just we have a really awesome, like, hardcore dedicated fan base, friend group and all that, and it allows us to be able to go out on the road and be supported, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, I mean, because it's, you guys play awesome shows, so you're gonna have a good fan base. But did you guys start off as Coffin Cats, or were you another name before that?
So I played in a few different bands, playing upright beforehand. I played, for a short while, I played with a band called, Betty Fords.
I know who the Betty Fords are.
Oh, great. A great, great Detroit band. So I played with them for a little while. And then a couple
Graveyard
of the guys,
Tree song.
We would do, we had like a rockabilly cover band called Rebel Rousers. And then I started playing with some friends from high school. We had a band, we called it V8 Nightmare. And, before V8 Nightmare, I'm sorry, we had a band, I was in a band called Mephisto Mafia. And with that band, I had written the songs V8 Nightmare and Chainsaw Massacre and stuff, which would later go on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. 'Cause we were having that debate before we started, we were like, yeah, I know it was a song, but I was like, I'm pretty sure it was the band name before that.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Go on YouTube. Somebody uploaded. If you go on YouTube and look up Mephisto Mafia, you can hear like early versions of Chainsaw Massacre and V8 Nightmare. And it's cool. It's a buddy of mine. He lives out in Vegas now, but a buddy of mine, Davis Vaughn. He was the lead guy at the time, and it was a really cool band to get started with. We had a really spooky, cool look. He was an Elvis impersonator at one time, so he had the look and all that, and nice. It was a really fun band. And then I just had this itch to get out there and hit the road, and so my brain was I was focused on one thing, just touring, and finding the guys able to do it. And that's what eventually led to starting Coffin Cats. And at first I wasn't even planning on being a singer in the band. I just wanted to be the bass player and maybe do some backup vocals and whatnot. But then when I linked up with Tommy, he was like, oh, I don't want to sing. we didn't want to be a band that had a drummer singer. So
yeah,
I guess I had to do it.
Did you already know that you could sing, or did you just pick it up and you're like, fuck it, this is my job now?
Well, I kind of sang like co-lead in V8 Nightmare, and I was still learning my voice. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I knew that I could do okay kind of singing in key, and it didn't sound terrible, but I had no, I listened to early recordings of me and I cringed because I had no vocal control. I had no idea what I was doing. It was just throw everything out there. And yeah. But no, really, all of us, so when the band started, it was originally the lineup that you see now. It was E-Ball, Tommy, and I, and then Eric E-Ball. After he had been in the band for a few months, it wasn't working out with work schedules and all this stuff. So another buddy of mine, Damien Detroit, he came in and played with us for a couple of years. And then Damien had school things he had to do and wasn't able to tour as much as we wanted to. So we had another friend of ours, a former bandmate of Tommy's, and his name was Ketch. And he was on the Straying from the Pack album. And he did a year or so out on the road with us. And then at that time, E-Ball popped back up and in our lives, and we were like, hey, want to be in the band again? And so it's been me, E-Ball, and Tommy. And Tommy left for a stretch of time to take care of things back home, and we had two different guitar players in his place. And then Tommy came back around 2016, 2017. And we've been back together, solid original lineup ever since. So,
yeah, which that's awesome. A lot more than most bands that have had 20 plus years can say. Like, that doesn't happen very often.
We all go back with each other before Coffin Cats. Like, I went to high school with Eric, and I knew Tommy from Tommy was in a band called Press, and so me the bands I was in, I was always just very nose to the grindstone. Like, let's get in there. Let's do a good show. Let's, you know, and then we'd show up to the club and there'd be Tommy's band. They're all out in the back puking in the parking lot. Drunk. Like, look at those guys. And then, so we'd get on, we'd do our show, and then those guys would spill onto the stage and be just be all half passed out trying to play their instruments and all that. And it was always just kind of like, oh yeah, those guys. And then lo and behold, the guitar player, you know, he becomes one of my best friends and, you know, my main dude.
That's awesome. So I noticed that is Tommy like endorsed by Reverend Guitars.
Yeah, so Reverend Guitars, they're a wonderful company, and they were based out of southeastern Michigan here.
Yeah, I remember that Ron Ashton had his own signature model, and I was like, triple pickups was fucking awesome.
So it was originally started by Joe Naylor, and he a fantastic guitar builder, and I believe he's an amp builder as well. And then the company was sold to a guy named Ken Haas. And Ken has just been an absolute champion for us as far as we approached him about working with them. And from the first email, it was just like we were part of the family. And we've had Reverend Guitars with us out on the road for some time now. They're rock solid guitars. They take a beating. And I mean, we've had Gretsch endorsements and stuff like that. And those didn't last because the guitars themselves, we were just like, we can't keep them together.
No, dude, I hear you.
And so, like I said, Reverend's been fantastic. And then the idea, Ken proposed the idea of like, hey, Tommy, do you want to have a signature model? Which I think at first terrified Tommy because, you know, Tommy doesn't consider himself like an Yngwie Malmsteen or anything
right.
We're musicians. We by no means do we consider ourselves like top musicians. We know enough to get the job done.
But you're like, I'm not a virtuoso or anything.
Yeah. So we were like, oh man, signature series. And I'm like, Tommy, you better start learning some scales, man. You're going to get ready to do the Tommy Coffin guitar tutorial and all that. And he's like, oh man. And don't know, but it turned out really cool. We got to have a say, and we wanted to make the guitar stand out a little bit from the Reverend lined up. So we had the idea that have a reverse headstock 80s style, and then have the tremolo area carved out so that he could do up and down dive bombs. And
they look cool with the sparkle, the ones I've seen.
So that was the other thing too, is we started to realize like we, looking at stuff on stage and looking at other bands on stage, when everything's all blacked out, it's hard to see action on stage. And so we decided that we wanted to have more of a sparkle aesthetic to our instruments, at least. And so like at that time I had a bass with like a red sparkled sides. And I think Tommy's first signature guitar was red sparkle, and E-Ball's drum kit was red sparkle, and it looked really cool in the pictures and stuff. But we're just into sparkle guitars for the one. It's just a cool vintage finish, and
yeah, also I always wanted a sparkle jet. They're just a little expensive, you know.
Yeah, I don't mean to be pimping Reverend Guitars, but I can say that I've definitely bought instruments and paid for them what their list price was, and had been thoroughly disappointed in the quality after a while, but. Reverend, they are really worth every penny. And even if you buy a used one, you can feel how rock solid they are. Like,
did one of you guys have like a see-through guitar with some lights in it at one point? I thought I seen that at a show, but it might have been a show you guys played that somebody else was at also.
Yeah, you know, I want to say that I've seen that, but that wasn't us.
Okay, because I was like, I think it was them, but it was as when the time I'm thinking of was like at the Majestic, and it was like when they were using the bar side stage and the bigger stage, they were alternating each band. So, and it was one of those nights where there's like 15 bands, so it's constant back and forth. So I'm probably mixing it up with another, but
some of those Black Christmas shows over the years have been fairly chaotic, you know, with the changeovers and, oh shit, this band's playing right now. Oh shit, I got to run over the Majestic side. Oh shit, I got to get up.
It was like that last year.
It was like you guys, Legendary Shack Shakers, Gallows Bound. I don't remember who else was there.
That was a fun year. Yeah. I've seen the preview of what the lineup is, at least for the, we're doing the Magic Stick stage, and the list of bands is awesome. And I'm going to refrain from announcing anything yet, but
I know a handful of them, but off air, that's a, can't leak any of them.
I'm pumped.
Yeah. It'll be a fun show for sure.
It's, you know, it's a it's, besides the fact that there's awesome bands there and everything, it's really cool because as all of us get older in the scene and whatnot, life takes over and you can't make it out downtown all the time. You can't make it out to a show a couple hours away because life takes over sometimes as responsibilities happen. So it's really cool to have a show like Black Christmas at the end of the season or end of the year, I should say, because people from out of town have flown back in to see people at home and you see a lot of faces that you haven't seen in a long time. So it's almost like a big reunion sometimes as well.
It was weird. Last year, there was a couple of people from Alpena that they no longer live here, but they showed up at that show. And I was, it was just weird to see those people there of all places. You know what I mean?
So for your upcoming record, I wanted to ask this before we got a little off topic, but is there, I mean, you guys kind of have your formula at this point, but is there any like crazy surprises that are going to be on this new thing or no?
Well, you know, one thing that we really try to do is make sure that we're not playing a song that we've written before. Yeah. And so Tommy and I, what we'll do, we'll get high and then we'll record stuff on our phones and bounce it back and forth to each other and be like, does this sound original, or is this something we've done, or is this something a friend band has done or a band we like? Does this sound too familiar? So we focus a lot on that now, is not copying things or trying to strive to bring originality into something that's so, you know.
Yeah, the subconscious can really fuck you up.
I mean, there's only so many minor chords you can play.
Yeah, right, and in so many different ways.
You can only sound so dark and creepy so many times. But I think we gave it a good effort on this one. And it's cool because I feel like we've been able to make an album that we've been wanting to make for some time, but always in previous years, there was always with previous recordings, there was always such a time constraint because time is money, and being in an actual recording studio, we just didn't have that kind of budget to go in and stay for a week and work out all the bugs. And so it was always just kind of go in, all right, on this day, we're going to go in, lay down all the drum and bass. This day, we're going in, do all the guitar. And this day is all the vocals, and that's it. And that's how we did all the earlier releases pretty much. And so we kind of did that with Can't Take It With You in 2020. And then on this one, we really focused on doing some production and making it sound like we wanted, like how a Coffin Cats album, how we always pictured it sounding. So that's
the right amount of polished, but the right amount of grungy still.
Yeah. And I really wanted, we have a sound live, and Tommy plays an Orange amp with a Rock Reverb head. I have a specific sound that I like to have live. And so what we did was, the way that we recorded this album is that it's really just guitar, bass, and drums. And we triple track the guitar. We did it kind of Randy Rhoads style. So it's a very thick guitar, but it's one big guitar playing the same thing. And we wanted to have that sound of a three piece, not like a three piece that sounds like a five piece on the album.
Right.
But basically wanted to be able to recreate things live. And in the past, like that was always kind of a hard and fast rule of like, don't do anything more than you can't do live, because chances are the song that's like next to impossible to play live is going to be what people want to hear.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes you just can't help it, and you just want to add a keyboard in on a song or something like that. That's happened a couple times, but for the most part, that's a rule we try to stick to, is to, you know, make it believable, make it that it's us and that we can do it live. And so we really focused heavy on that. And Tommy over the years, recent years, has really stepped up. And I always wanted Tommy to kind of be like a co-lead singer with me. And the more stuff we're writing these days is the more he's introducing his vocals into it. And it's cool. I'm excited to get this one out.
Yeah, I definitely see him doing like a lot of backing during the live shows and stuff too, which is cool.
Even better is that we have a music video coming out. We haven't done an actual music video since I think 2013, something like that. And so we actually have a new music video coming out with the first single. The first single comes out October 30th. And then I believe it's November 3rd or 4th is when the video comes out. It's for a song called Way Out There. And we made Tommy the star of the video because we're like, Eric was like, I don't want to do any acting. And I'm like, well, I don't want to do any acting. So we're like, make Tommy do it. And so Tommy's the star of the video. And I just, you know, Eric and I and Big Joey just have big bit parts, and it's cool. We're really happy with the way it turned out. And, it's goofy because there's no way that we can go in and anybody that knows us, like, again, we've been out on the road. People have met us and get to know us personally and know that, like, we don't take it. I mean, we take what we do serious, but at the same time, we're not serious dudes. You know, we love to laugh and have a good time, and we want our show environment to be a good time and all that. Right. And so if we were to put a video out with us all standing there trying to look tough and all that and be serious, everyone would be like, well, look at these dickheads.
Right. Yeah. Who the fuck are these guys?
So we did a video. The only way that we know how it's just goofy and cheesy. And actually we're shooting another video on Monday before we head off to Europe. We're shooting it out on Joey Drink Tickets property. And it's going to involve a UFO crash
and
Tommy's character from the first video is going to be chased around by Eric and I in alien outfits, and it's going to be,
so it's like a continuation from the first one, and can have a storyline going. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Can't wait for a fucking UFO crash.
Tommy was the guy that like didn't show up that day that later was informed like, oh, you're the star lead in this. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't think he even realized when he showed up for the video shoot, for the first video shoot, that he was going to be as involved as he is. And it's great because he was with the camera crew for hours, and Eric and I were just kind of sitting out like on our phones, like, oh, this is great.
That's cool. Can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it's cool too because we've really always wanted to keep doing music videos, but it was just hard to just nail down time and find people to do it and in between tours and stuff. And now we were like, we absolutely have to do music videos for this new album. Like, there's some songs that we really would like to get out there, and a lot of times you have to have that video medium behind it for people to catch their attention, you know,
it's just another way for it to get out there too. I mean, you might never know who will see the video and like catches on that way and then leads them to the album.
Yeah. And it's the first song we chose the first two singles by design. The first song sounds like it would definitely be us. And then the second song is more along the lines of like if you're familiar with some of our earlier catalog, we had a song called Buzzkill Bitch.
Yes, and, sir.
So we wanted to do the come out swinging. Here's the Coffin Cats, you know, and then our second track is kind of a crossover track. It's got more of an 80s feel to it. It's different than anything we've done before, but it's not anything that would be surprising that we did it, because we, over the years, we've always kind of dipped our toes into different things here and there.
That's what I've always appreciated about you. Every album had its own sound, really. Or, you know, you'd have a little more psychobilly on this one, a little more rockabilly on that one.
Yeah, the cool thing is that I can definitely, like, Tommy and I can listen to these through our older albums, and we always joke about, like, oh yeah, remember when we were listening to this album all the time, and we were all living here together. We wrote this album while we were heavily influenced by this band and this substance or whatever.
Right.
Every album is a time and a place of what we were revved up by, music or whatever the hell we were into. And so it's, every album really has just been a definition of how we've matured, evolved, or and where we're at in our lives with the music. But I will say that we don't like to slow down. And the day that we release an album that has songs that are like 120 BPM and slower, and that's it, that's when we should retire.
Yeah, I couldn't see like a Coffin Cats like acoustic ballads album. I just wouldn't.
We don't like to go slow. When you go slow, you feel naked up there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it.
People are like staring into your soul. Yeah, you're not up there being crazy.
Yeah, it's too slow. There's too much time between beats. People are looking at me, man.
Yeah, it's funny.
So outside of music and stuff, what are you into? What do you do on your very little downtime that you probably have?
These days I try to spend as much time with my family as I can, just because I am gone for a good portion of the year, and I have a young son, and you know, it's his formative year, so I try to be there as present as much as I can. And him and I do cool stuff. Like every Friday when I'm home, we call it dudes night. So after I get done with you guys here, we're going to go have a dudes night, go get pizza, play video games, that kind of stuff. And nice. So on that, but I mean, I have my hobbies as well. I ride motorcycles whenever I can get a spare second to get out there and have some time. And, I also, have an upright bass pickup business. And so, I make upright bass pickups, and I have a website and I sell them. And I've been doing that for about 12 years now. And, it helps a lot. It helps supplement when times are starting to get a little tight, or maybe say that the paycheck this week wasn't so good. The pickup business helps tie loose ends together and all that. So it's been really cool. And, it's really neat too, because a lot of, not a lot, but quite a few upright bass players that I definitely look up to have used the pickups and enjoy them and stuff. So it's, you know,
yeah, it's gotta mean a lot, you know, guys you look up to are using your sound.
Yeah, that would be a sort of like a revelation thing. Like sometimes we get kind of like, holy shit, I can't believe we're talking to that guy. Like, I mean, you, like, really? Like,
So Jimbo Wallace from Reverend Horton Heat. I mean, the Reverend Horton Heat in general, that band was like, to me, growing up, I mean, you got to think, when you're a kid, you think like, I mean, how old are you guys?
Me, I'm almost 33.
I'm almost 40.
Okay, so I'm almost 42. So when I was a kid, like Green Day and Offspring were the bands. Like they were giant. They felt like they were untouchable. You know, like I'd never get to meet those guys. And that's exactly how I felt about Reverend Horton Heat. Like that, he was an icon. Like my throughout high school, that was like he was to me. That was what cool was. Right. Was Reverend Horton Heat. And now we're friends, text once in a while, like him and Rev, his name's Jim. And him and I, we nerd out over recording gear and stuff like that. It's just, it's a total mind fuck. And besides that, Jimbo, the upright bass player, he was the first famous upright bass player I ever met. And he was just hanging out behind the club. And I couldn't believe it. I actually walked up and talked to him, and he talked to me for, here I am. I'm like a 16, 17 year old nervous kid. And he talked my ear off for a good 20 minutes about upright and giving me all these tips. And that's something that really stuck with me. And it became kind of just a not a rule, but just a way of thought with Coffin Cats about like, hey man, and Tommy was with me at that time too. It was like, hey man, remember when Jimbo was just so cool, and he didn't have to take time to talk to us. Who were we? And that stuck with us in the sense of how much that meant to us. And there's a possibility that us doing that to people that come out to our shows, hanging out at the merch booth, shooting the shit and just saying, hey, we're just normal guys, normal people, just like you guys. And we appreciate you being here. I mean, we all grew up working class, and you know, from growing up times to times, you know, getting food on the table wasn't always easy. We don't think we ever left that mentality, because we're just grateful for everything that we get. And so getting back to, it's cool to be able to go on tour with bands that you looked up to that you never thought you'd ever meet and become friends with. And it's wild. That's an incredibly rewarding thing about being in this band.
Yeah. I was trying to think of when you said like one of the most famous upright bass players, I was like trying to think of other upright bass players outside of jazz. Like, you know, I could think
Shack
of like
Shaker's bass player, like yeah. His bass. Fucking,
I don't know. I can't remember his name
more than his name.
They've had a few different bass players over the years.
Last time I seen him, it was a dude in a Hawaiian shirt with like a, one of them. I don't know what the hat's called. It's not a fedora, but like
Mark Robertson, who's a, he's a phenomenal bass player.
Yeah, he was real cool.
Good guy. And Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats, I consider him a celebrity upright bass player. And,
oh, definitely.
I was thinking like Paul Chambers and stuff like that, like old school, like 60s jazz players. Like,
it's funny too, because I mean, we have no business playing with a band like Lee Rocker's blues band or his rockabilly band, or like early on we were a very raw, aggressive, like punk band with an upright bass. And here we are, we were opening up for Lee Rocker, and he was probably like, we did it a couple times. He was probably like, who are these bozos?
That's so fucking cool though.
Yeah, that would be really fucking cool.
Do you remember Phantom Rocker? That, and I'm sure you do. That Mark came out Burke. In the 80s. Yeah.
Mark's awesome dude. He comes out and hangs out with us sometimes when we come through San Antonio. He lives in San Antonio, Texas now. And it's awesome because we get to hang out with some of these guys that were there in the 80s when everything was really hot and heavy with the psychobilly scene in the UK and in Germany and all that. I mean, in Europe in general. And just to hear the stories, and it's cool. And to feel like you have some sort of respect coming from these guys towards us, it's incredibly rewarding, because you know we have guys that are going, hey man, you're keeping it going. We're like, we're just doing what we like to do. And yeah. You know,
that's fucking awesome though, man.
So I wanted to ask before we get to wrapping things up here, you have like a bobblehead coming out soon, don't you? I seen something about that.
Yeah. So,
Or is it already out?
It's actually in process. Okay. And years ago, Eball had the idea that he's like, hey, we should make some bobbleheads of ourselves and we'll start out with you. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. And so we did a run of 500 bobbleheads and we took them out on tour and they were gone pretty quick. And the only thing about them is that they were, you ever get the bobbleheads that like, even if you look at it funny, it falls apart, it cracks.
Yeah.
They're like that really, they break like a shitty coffee mug. and so they were really fragile. And we ended up with people going, oh man, when are you guys going to make more bobbleheads? And they've been asking for years. And so finally we're like, all right, let's look back into making bobbleheads. But I was like, I don't want to make another one of me. Let's make one of the band mascot, which we call it the Batcat. And so we had a fantastic artist by the name of Craig Holloway do the art layout, and then we had it sculpted, and now they're in production, and we should have them hopefully within a month or so.
Awesome. Yeah, I thought Craig did it. I wasn't 100% sure though, but I was like, I think we talked about something about that when we interviewed, but it might have been an off the air thing too.
The crazy thing is that so we were familiar with Craig but never really knew him, and then once we got to know him and talk to him about doing some sculpting for us or doing some designing for us, I realized that like shit, half of the cool bobbleheads that we see at clubs on the bar or whatever are his design.
Yeah, like yeah. Vinnie Stigma and shit.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of work out there, like just even outside of music too. Like when we were leading into interviewing him, like Rose, his wife, was sending us all this stuff that he's done, like different commercials and stuff. And I'm like, wow, it never even occurred to me that he was doing all that. Like, I just didn't think about it. So but he was an awesome guy, a lot of fun to interview.
Hopefully I'll see him in a week.
No, you won't, because Hayden's not playing.
I don't know if he's still coming or not.
Oh, okay. You'd have to ask him, I guess, then, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, one other thing before we get to our final question. I did want to ask, just for my own kind of personal curiosity, do you have any bands that you haven't played with yet that you really are dying to play with?
Yes. Alice Cooper, Bad Religion.
Those are both Alice Cooper kick-ass would be answers.
Fucking cool.
Have you ever met Alice Cooper?
No, but Tommy did. Okay. There was a local record signing or meet and greet, and Tommy was like, can you make the record out to Coffin Cats? And then Alice, he went on about, you know, Costco sells caskets, and maybe I'll get a casket for my cat. And we're like, whatever, Alice, that was cool. Thank you.
Like a total like Wayne's World moment.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I've heard he's a really cool guy. I feel like if you could align it correctly, like, and had the right people to pull off the show, he'd be down to do it.
Yeah, maybe one day we'll at least be able just to even be on the same festival or something like that.
I feel like you could, with like the, if it were like a Halloween niche type of show, like, I feel like it would pull off pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Unfortunately, this Halloween will be on a Delta flight. So I'll be missing all the Halloween festivities. I think we land in Amsterdam on Halloween, so maybe I'll have to go do some trick or treating at the local shops there.
Yeah, that'd be pretty wild in Amsterdam on Halloween.
I got a good Amsterdam story for you. So the first time that we were over in Amsterdam, Joey Jane Tickets and I went out on the town, and this was, you know, this is in the days of in the U.S. You couldn't go to the dispensary. You couldn't get space cakes or anything like that. It was still like, oh, you're going to Amsterdam. Are you going to get some space cakes or some hash?
Yeah.
And so we're like, yes, all of it. And we ended up going to the Bulldog Cafe, which is a very famous cafe in Amsterdam that serves space cakes. And there's a warning right on the wall that says, please allow 45 minutes before ordering another cake to make sure that, you know, the first one is not affecting you too heavily. We ordered a cake. Joey and I looked at each other after about 15 minutes. Like, are you feeling anything? And he's like, no, I'm not feeling anything. So, all right, well, let's get another one. So we're like, this is just tourist shit. This isn't, we'll be fine. You know, we got tolerance. And so 20 minutes go by and like, I still don't feel anything. We're like, yeah, I think this is a scam. Oh, you want to order another one and just get out of here? So we each had three space cakes. I remember it were like, they're like fairly decent sized rainbow cake. And I remember leaving the place. It was dark in there. I remember leaving, walking out into the sunlight, opening the door. And it felt like I was standing in front of the sun. I couldn't see anything. And then I grabbed on his arm. And at that time, Eric and Tommy's, they're like, oh, there you guys are. And they were across the street. So we went to step out into the street. I stepped off at the curb and it felt like I was stepping into the Grand Canyon. Like like a 6-inch like step down. I was like, oh, suspended in air. I had never had like a THC high like that in my life. I had no idea what was going on. And you know, you hear the stories now about like when people eat gummies and you know they've never eaten 100-milligram gummy before and that they damn near go to the hospital or do go to the hospital thinking
we've all heard the 911 calls that are like help.
So Joey and I both were just dead silent because I'm pretty sure his brain was doing exactly what my brain was doing and going uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't want to be high. I don't want to be high.
We were staying at a flat with some friends and we had to take a tram to where they were at, and that ride was so terrifying because I just remember like, I mean, am I looking at people? Am I looking weird? Oh no. And then we got back to our friend's flat and they were having a barbecue, and Joey and I proceeded to probably eat half of the food that was provided there just in a munchy craze. And we both passed out on the floor. And that was, That was our first time in Amsterdam. Space cakes. They're real.
Please wait 45 minutes.
They are not tourist garbage.
That being said, we'll probably go back to the Bulldog Cafe on Halloween.
Yeah, but you'll probably wait the full 45 this time, I would imagine.
Yeah, or I'm just going to be dumb about it and not learn my lesson. So,
is there any times that you've been on tour that, like, it was just shit and you're just like, I can't, like, everything was going wrong, bad shows, you know, bad weather, all that?
The number one rule for us out on the road from the very beginning was like, yeah. You know, after about a week and a half, we all would love to sleep in our bed. We would all love to use our toilet. We all love to see our girlfriend or whatever the hell we got going on back home at the time. But it was always like, shut up. You don't talk about it. Why? Right. That's no shit, Sherlock. Everybody wants to eventually go back home. They get a little homesick here and there. But, you know, the thing is that we've always just had the mentality of like, we're very lucky to be out here. And let's not piss and moan about, oh, I can't wait to be home, because not everybody, even our very early tours, we happened to line ourselves up with jobs that were cool with us leaving for a month at a time and still come back and have a job. And yeah. So we knew
which
we
is
were
hard to find on
fucking
own.
Impossible.
And let alone to find four people that can go out on the road, you know? So we were always just really grateful for that. And the other thing too is that we would have bands come out with us and they'd fall apart after like a week on the road because somebody didn't, you know, they'd never spent that much time in close quarters together and the whole band falls apart, you know, and it's like, well, that's where I say chemistry is more important than talent when it comes to having an act. And, you know, your talent will come with time, but you have to be able to have the time, you know.
Yeah, or the money to afford your own individual tour buses.
Yeah, right, which...
Shit. We can't all be the police. So.
No, that's a good way to look at it, though. It's like, if you're going to piss and moan, man, there's a lot of people that want to be on that road.
Yeah.
We've sent road guys home. Like, no, you're killing the vibe here, dude. This isn't how coffin casts roll. We're out here to work, and we're out here to give a good time, and you're not, you know, congruent with our thoughts. So
you're acting like a butthurt bitch. Go home.
Yeah. Now, that is a great attitude to have, like, because it makes sure you're already set up to have a good day no matter what. So,
yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When your transmission is blowing out on the side of the road and you're in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma and you know you're going to miss the show, if you have somebody next to you going, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Yeah, it doesn't fix
that
the problem.
Fucking
yeah,
crazy.
That's the world. And that's, it's just, we've all, it's the cool thing is that we were always on that same wavelength. It wasn't like, oh, you got to get like this, you know? No, it's either you have it or you don't. And because we've been in those situations, where cooler heads need to prevail, because we just blew out both trailer tires in the middle of Death Valley. And what are we going to do? You know, and we just lost our transmission that earlier in the tour we lost, and then it got built shittily. And so we lost it again in the mountains somewhere. And, you know, any road hazard that you can think of over the years has happened. I mean, we've put a million miles down at least. So shit happens. And you just need to know, like, everyone keep your heads together. We'll get through it. And you always do. And, you know, worst case scenario, you lose a show and you'll make it up next time around. But shit happens, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like it's probably helpful to have somebody mechanically savvy in the bus with you.
Yeah, which unfortunately it was usually me.
Yeah.
And I'm alternator. I've changed. And I remember it being in an alley in El Paso, and our van, the alternator shit. Oh no, the starter shit out on us. Right in the alley. Like we unloaded and we went to go start it back up and click, 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 click,
yeah.
Click. And I'm like down there with a hammer, and we knew it was on its way out, but we're like, it'll be fine. We'll hit it with a hammer.
Yep.
And it had its last hammer hit and was like, I'm done. And so the show, the doors are open. The first band's taking stage. Me and E-Ball are running down to an O'Reilly's that just so happened to be like a mile down the road. We went to O'Reilly's, bought an alternator and a tool kit. And I'm under I literally put the last bolt in. And 5 minutes later was having a shot and getting ready to go on the stage covered in like under Van Grime and all this shit, but we got it done. And it's just, that's the kind of stuff you just got to be prepared to do, you know? And
yeah, the way of the road.
Yeah.
All pun intended on that. So before I get to our usual last question that we ask everybody on the show, one, we want to thank you. Well, actually, I should ask Jeremy, do you have anything you want to input before I...
No, I mean, we covered a lot of shit aside from the last question.
Yeah. Vic, do you have anything you want to add before we get to that?
Well, I want to say thank you guys for having me. It's cool. I've watched your footage online before and stuff, so it's cool to actually be on here.
Oh shit, that's fucking cool.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
I watched that Craig interview. It was really cool.
Awesome. And, thank you.
No, thank you for having me. And if anybody wants to find out about our tour dates, you know, I think we got the social media thing down, right? No, yeah. But no, we actually have a website, and it's called coffincatsrock.com, and that's where you can ultimately find the confirmed dates, because every now and then a show event will get made, but it's wrong day, wrong information, or something like that. And if anybody's looking for hard confirmed dates, it's on our website. And then, yeah, we also have the pre-order for the new album available on the website as well. And, well, like I said, we're at the beginning of our touring season, and all of our upcoming tours will be on there. We'll be announcing our next North American run here in a few weeks as well.
Okay, awesome. And I'll put links to you guys' website and Instagram and everything in the episode description, so anybody listening, go check that out. And I will be hitting up Eric to get copies of the record and some of the back catalog in the store as well, too.
Wonderful. Yeah. And so, yeah, let's do this again. And I'll see if I can get it lined up to get the other guys with me. And so maybe at the end of the year, we can all check in or something. Do maybe a pre-Black Christmas show or something.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be a lot of fun.
I'm fucking down.
I got to email you to get in contact with you about when we get to posting and everything anyways. But I'll shoot you my number and stuff, and we can be in touch about that.
Great.
So one thing we always ask all of our guests, and if you watch the Craig episode, then you already know, outside of the genre of music that you play, what is something that you listen to that people would not expect?
Lana Del Rey.
Damn, he was like on the money with it. He already had it prepared.
I don't know anything about her. I don't really follow her career or anything, but she's got some albums out that I just absolutely enjoy. So
you got any Lana records in your collection?
I do.
Okay. I got three of them. So,
oh, okay. So
us too.
That Summertime Sadness song, man. It's like, I know that was like super popular, but that's just a fucking good track, dude.
Even though I don't understand some of the slang hip hop and all that stuff, like it's a great written album, a great mixed album. That Born to Die album, it's going to be a classic.
Yeah, that one, the one that what was the one that just came out? There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard was the one that just most recently came out. I have those two, and I can't.
I enjoy that she brings a haunting a vintage reverb drenched sound to a younger generation. Yeah. And because it's like she didn't reinvent the wheel. That sound has been done before, but it hasn't been done well in a very, very long time. And it's cool to hear somebody that has an actual talented voice. And I've watched live videos, and you know, that's a real voice. Mm-hmm. And that's a real voice that some nights is on, some nights is off. And it's like, that's a real person singing there. It's not a backing track. It's just refreshing to see real original artists out there in the quote unquote pop world.
Yeah, especially like you said, in the pop world, because a lot of that, there is so much like studio trickery and stuff that goes on, even in live shows, music videos, recording sessions, all that.
Chris Isaak to me is one of the cool people too. So
Chris Isaak's good too. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you must say. I was going to let you know when I was talking to you. In the email, but I was like, nah, we'll hit him off guard, but I didn't think you'd know the question already, but you came prepared, man.
I honestly, I didn't even, I totally forgot that was a question, but that's just, that's kind of, I'm like, anytime I know that anybody's going to ask me something towards like, oh, you listen to anything out, you know, I'm like, yeah, this is what I listen to, like to chill out, or, you know, at the end of the night, or when it's a long, dark road and I'm not tired and just sit there in the headphones. And it's just, yeah. It's a vibe, yeah. Especially after you get high.
Yeah, I agree for sure. But all right, man, we'll let you get to your dude's night. I don't want to keep you any more of your time than we already have. But
having me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you.
We really appreciate your time, and we'll be in touch with you for sure. And like I said, I got to email you about when we get to posting. But thanks again for your time. It's been awesome talking to you, and hopefully we'll see you at Black Christmas.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to be friends with some other bands and stuff. So if you ever need contacts for some other cool bands, let me know and I might know them and send them your way, because I really do appreciate podcasts that support the scene. And you know, there's a lot of bands that really should be on a lot of these podcasts, just, you know, given their perspective of what it's like out there. And
yeah we try to get everybody, like anybody that we really enjoy listening to. We don't care if they're big, small, they got one listener or 100,000. Like, we like to get them on here and talk to them and hear their story.
Great. Great. Well, thank you guys.
Yeah. And, thank you, man. And we'll definitely take you up on that, I'm sure, at some point.
Yes. So.
Hit me up anytime. So you got my contact, and then, we'll change phone numbers and stuff too. And
cool.
When I'm up your way in northern Michigan there, I'll get a hold of you guys and whatnot. So.
Right on.
All right, man. Sounds good. You enjoy your night, and we'll be in touch.
Sounds good. Thank you. Take care.
You too.